IABC Ottawa presents The Voice.
The Voice offers expert insights and practical takeaways for people in the marketing communications industry.
We're sharing the latest ideas and issues with sector professionals.
What can we do to help you take your career to the next level?
I am Tina Barton, and this is The Voice.
I also have a background in government relations, and it really does help to know how the bureaucracy works. And so there's a national movement afoot in Canada to put eating disorders on the healthcare agenda and to develop a national strategy.
Do you think more communications professionals should pursue executive director position or, you know, something outside of the communications realm?
I think that if they don't, they risk pigeonholing themselves into being a person that's only in communications. Hi, my name's Jody Bryan, and I'm the executive director with the Hopewell Eating Disorder Support Center of Ottawa. I came to the nonprofit world after over 16 years in government, so I consider myself a reformed public servant now. Most of my time in government was spent in the public safety arena, and through that work, I developed a deep and abiding passion for and interest in criminal justice issues. So a lot of my work in the community to date has been volunteer work with the Elizabeth Fry Society of Ottawa and now the John Howard Society of Ottawa.
Hi everyone, thanks for tuning into The Voice today. I'm Tina Barton, and today I'm discussing the transition from being a communications director to becoming an executive director with Jody Bryan. We're going to explore how big a leap this was and how her 18 plus years in the communications industry helped her significantly. But did it also hinder her in any way? And what new insights into communications does she now have from sitting in the executive director's seat? We'll find all this out as well as learn more about the prevalence of eating disorders among young women in Canada and Eastern Ontario and learn more about Hopewell as well. Firstly, my thanks to Thornley Fellas for producing this podcast. They're an integrated communications agency based in Ottawa and Toronto. Jody, thanks for joining us on The Voice today.
I'm really happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Now, you're a communications veteran, if I may call you that, with over 18 years' experience. Could you share with us a brief overview of your rich and varied communications history?
So I'm a graduate of the Bachelor of Public Relations program at Mount St. Vincent University, and I believe that many of your listeners are probably the same. I worked for Nortel briefly when I first graduated before signing on with the public service in 1998. As I indicated, most of my career was with the public safety field, but I had some really interesting assignments in central agencies and also at International Trade Canada. My government career was actually bookended by starting at the Correctional Service of Canada, and that's where I also ended my career. I was offered the opportunity in 2012 to do an assignment with the Canadian Centre on Substance Abuse as the manager of communications. And this was really exciting for me because most of my career had been in government, and this was an opportunity to really take a look and see what was happening outside of the public service. This was supposed to be an assignment, but I think within 3 months, I realized that I wanted to permanently move outside of government because there was a lot more flexibility and challenge that came from being outside the fold of government communications, which was quite strict at the time. Mm-hmm. So after CCSA, the reason I left CCSA actually was quite unfortunate. My mother and stepfather both became quite seriously ill with mental illnesses. And so I took leave from permanent work and did some consulting. But most of what I was doing for a good year and a half was being a caregiver to them and really getting to see the broken mental health system that we operate in Canada pushed me to looking for a job when I was able to return to work that was more focused on frontline mental health service provisions to people who were struggling like I was. It occurred to me very early on in the process with them that as a highly educated, resourceful person, I was still completely lost when I was faced with their illness. And so when I did go back to work, it was really important to me to do something that would give a hand up to people like my parents and people like me.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So what is Hopewell?
Hopewell Eating Disorder Support Center of Ottawa was started in 1999 by three mothers who found themselves in the halls of the CHEO Eating Disorder Support Program with their daughters. And they realized that what they needed more than anything to help them practice self-care and to get through this illness with their daughters was to have a peer support system, somebody they could talk to, somebody who really knew what they were going through. Very humble beginnings, basically started around a kitchen table. Today, we are approaching our 20th anniversary in 2019, and we offer peer support to individuals who are coming out of treatment for eating disorders because it's a very hard transition back to life. We, you know, going back to our roots, we also offer peer support to family and friend members. Going back to our roots, we also offer support to family members and friends because it is a very long and challenging, complex recovery journey. We offer mentoring programs, and one of the areas that my communications background has allowed me to really hone in and focus on is education and outreach. So it would be wonderful if we could prevent eating disorders from developing in the first place. And while that's a bit of a pipe dream, I think it's really important to do whatever we can to educate young people about media literacy and positive body image and self-esteem so that we can at least put some protective factors around them.
Absolutely. So what can you tell us about the different types of eating disorders and also how common it is among young women in Canada or Eastern Ontario, whatever stats you have?
So the problem with eating disorders is that we don't really have a lot of reliable data, because if you go to your doctor's office and you present with an eating disorder, there's actually not a health code for eating disorders. And so this presents a problem in the sense that we don't have clear numbers. However, some very preeminent researchers in Canada have estimated that upwards of 1 million Canadians at any given time would meet the diagnostic criteria for an eating disorder. So if you look at population, that means that close to 400,000 Ontarians would meet that criteria. And yet, in the entire region of Eastern and Northern Ontario, we have 12 beds for treatment, 6 for youth and 6 for adult.
Wow.
And this creates a situation that only the very, very sickest individuals get treated, which is not a great model of healthcare. And I liken it to going to the emergency room and being told that you have stage 2 cancer and being told you should come back when it's stage 4.
Wow.
One of the major problems, we all know that early intervention is the biggest predicator of successful recovery. And with the model of healthcare we have for eating disorders right now, the opposite is happening. You can also imagine what it would be like for somebody who is severely mentally ill and restricting food and having body dysmorphia and thinking that they're incredibly fat when they have a BMI of, say, 14, being told by a doctor they're not sick enough.
And just for context, the average or healthy BMI is about 20 to 25 or so?
In the 20s, right. We often see people presenting with serious heart issues. We see people presenting with low blood pressure. We see people presenting with bone density problems. It's very frightening when you actually take a look at what the reality of this disease does to individuals and also what it does to families. And so I think that's one of the most important things Hopewell can do is provide that hope.
Hope without beds.
I think just hope that there could be recovery in the end. One of the most startling statistics that most people don't understand is that eating disorders are in fact the most fatal of all mental illnesses. Anorexia and bulimia together kill as many Canadians every year as melanoma. And if you receive a diagnosis of anorexia, you have a 1 in 5 chance of dying. And that's either from the physical ravages of the disease on your body or because the individual commits suicide because they have lost hope that they're ever going to get better. And so we try as best we can to provide people with the resources and supports they can to get through this incredibly complex physical and mental health care issue.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine you provide families with the resources that they could try and provide the care at home, seeing as there aren't beds available in professional settings.
Yeah, and in a lot of times, it's really just being on the other end of the phone and listening. So I have a fantastic program coordinator, and she spends a lot of her days helping families navigate this incredibly complex system. The other issue is that eating disorders often co-occur with other morbidities. So, for instance, we see a lot of eating disorder patients with substance abuse issues. We see a lot of eating disorder patients with depression issues. And some of our healthcare providers still believe that you cannot treat these at the same time. And so we do the best we can to impart the knowledge, the wisdom, and the hope that we can so that these people are best equipped to tackle what can be a very confusing, frustrating, and almost dead-end-like system.
Mm. Absolutely. So this is a really significant and pretty confronting topic to step into when you're brand new, compounded by the fact that you were a communications director that signed on to be an executive director. So can you take us to day one? Do you recall how you felt as you walked into the executive director office for the first time and stood around and looked at your new environment and your new capacity?
I think overwhelmed would be a very good but inadequate way of describing it. Yeah, I've worked in large bureaucracies and small organizations that are very well supported for my whole life.
I just want to say I've had swearing on the podcast before.
Damn overwhelmed is as far as I'll go, at least on the podcast. Overwhelmed is a very good adjective, but does not do justice to realizing, oh my gosh, I need IT support. There's nobody here but me. You know, I have an HR issue. There's nobody here but me. And I think I remember posting on Facebook something like, you know, today I was GR, HR, IT, PR, all of the acronyms. Because when you are an executive director in an organization as small as Hopewell, and we're talking 3 full-time staff, you wear every single hat. Mm-hmm. You juggle all the balls.
Do you think a career in communications prepared you for this role?
I think it did, because one of the things about communications, as everyone listening will know, is that you really need to have the innate ability to turn on a dime and to pick up a crisis and to figure out what is the problem, what are our options, do a risk analysis, an environmental scan, and figure out how you're going to work your way through this. So that ability to quickly think on the feet and also to analyze the people that you're trying to reach. And so for me, what was very new was the whole idea of funders and donors. It's not something I've had a lot of experience with in my life, but public relations and communications certainly did allow me to take a look at who's my audience, what are their needs, what do they want to hear from me, and to segment them and then tailor my messages so that if I'm going with a funding ask or I'm trying to reach out to a donor, I'm doing it in a way that really speaks their language.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm sure you've been applying your communication skills to the job. And can you tell us about some decisions or changes you've made that have been influenced by your communications background?
When I first looked at Hopewell, I saw their mission was twofold. It's the provision of supports and services to individuals and their family and their friends. And it's also the prevention, education, and outreach component. And when I actually got into the job, I realized that the mission was very unbalanced and that most of the organization's resources, rightfully so, were being put towards the first part of that mission statement, which is to help people that need us. And without wanting to take away from that, I also understood the value of becoming more well-known in the community, getting Hopewell's name out there more, getting into schools, getting in front of people and practitioners so that they knew that we existed, because having that knowledge of who we are and what we do means that when somebody needs something, you're the first person on the top of their call list. Mm-hmm. So that, I think, was probably the biggest impact that my background had on the ability to step into this role and really figure out what we needed to do to balance the mission statement out a little bit more. Obviously, having worked in government and having worked in a nonprofit agency like CCSA, I also have a background in government relations, and it really does help to know how the bureaucracy works. And so there's a national movement afoot in Canada to put eating disorders on the healthcare agenda and to develop a national strategy.
And do we have a national strategy?
We do not. We have pretty much nothing. We also have a mental health care system at a national level that is slow to respond to how important eating disorders are. I mean, if they're the most fatal, there probably should be some attention paid to it. So my ability to know how government works and who to go and how to talk to a member of parliament, I have been helping out off the side of my desk with some of the more national scale, larger efforts. And that's kind of fun because it does allow me to flex my government relations muscles a little bit.
Mm-hmm, that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Well, the next question for me was going to be, you've been on the job for just over a year, and what initiatives are you most proud of?
So not only the rebalancing of the mission, which I'm very proud of, but we managed to secure a fairly significant funding envelope to hire a part-time prevention outreach coordinator. So this work that I spoke of that needed to be done, but as an executive director, I really did not have the time to be engaging in the lower level prevention and outreach really getting on the ground, my focus was forming alliances with the hospitals and clinicians and people who were executive directors of other partner organizations. The Taggart Parks Foundation, which is a very generous organization based in Ottawa, gave us a funding envelope to hire this prevention and outreach coordinator on a part-time basis for 1 year. And she has been piloting a program we call Celebrate Everybody, which is media literacy, self-image, positive body image into schools. So we're looking sort of grade 6, 7, 8 and trying to catch some of the issues before they might have an opportunity to bloom. And as I mentioned, putting that protective factor around kids so that they can critically look at a picture and know it's been Photoshopped and know that, you know, a beach body actually means just taking your body to the beach.
Mm-hmm. I like that definition.
Yeah.
As a fan of beach going.
Yes.
I think the other thing that's an issue too is when people are young, I think they're only in the moment, so they might look in the mirror and think that they look wonderful and they know that they're not eating properly to achieve that look. But what they might not realize is that if you're depriving yourself of food, then you're not getting nutrients to the brain, so you're not actually capable of being as smart as you could be, but you're also compromising your health. You're not going to look as good potentially as you get older because your skin's not getting the nutrients it needs, your organs aren't growing in the way they need to. And I'm sure that those are messages in education that you put out.
It is. And the other thing to realize is that in the social media world that the youth of today live in, and I thank God every day that I did not when I was in middle school and high school.
Me too.
Everything's about Snapchat and filters and Instagram, and so you're just putting what you consider to be your best image forward, and by doing so, you're erasing your imperfections, and all it is projecting an image. And I like to say people need to be very mindful of the fact that what these social media sites present is a highlight reel. And then you're comparing your life's film to it.
Yes.
And it's hard when, I imagine there's a lot of pressures when kids are younger and you look at the Kardashians and the, you know, the ideal body right now is severely anorexic.
Mm-hmm.
And there aren't a lot of other mental illnesses that you open up a magazine or you look at a movie and they are constantly reinforced. Nobody opens up People magazine and there's an article saying schizophrenia is sexy.
Mm-hmm.
But everywhere you look, if you are experiencing eating disorder behaviors and it's starting to take over your physical and mental health, everywhere you go, you're being told that you're doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm. No, it's really sad. I have seen some signs of encouragement. I've seen more time given to plus size models. And also on Instagram, I've seen a relatively new trend of people posting a couple of photos side by side. So one is their like best side, and then one is just showing like how they usually look. So they're starting to portray the person behind the image. So maybe that will keep going. I mean, we can only hope. I wanted to ask you, what has been the biggest gap in the skill set and experience of being a communications professional and then stepping up into the executive director ring?
I think that my time spent on nonprofit boards, so I was on the board of directors for the Elizabeth Fry Society of Ottawa, and I was also the chair of their fundraising and communications committee, and I currently sit as a board member with the John Howard Society of Ottawa. Those really gave me a window into nonprofit organizations, but they gave me that window as a person participating in the governance direction of those organizations. And I didn't have an opportunity and still don't have an opportunity and shouldn't have an opportunity as a board member to go down into the weeds to see what that organization does on a day-to-day basis. I think having that experience helped me, but going from government to a very large nonprofit and going to a very small nonprofit, you really don't know what you're up against, and it's a major sea change in pretty much everything that you're used to. Going from having, you know, IT support and HR support at your fingertips, and now your job is to keep the whole ship afloat. So grants and fundraising, still my biggest weakness, and I'm trying to rectify that every single day. But at the same time, when you look at grants and fundraising, you can also find the similarities to public relations and communications, where when it comes time for me to write a grant application and convince a committee of why they should give us money over somebody else, those writing and persuasive skills are coming straight to the forefront.
No question.
And fundraising is a lot about making the event meaningful. And so that also comes back to communications, where you're looking at your audience and you need to know, what do they want to hear? How do they want to hear it? and then tailoring something so that you meet their needs. So I think that it's incredibly, incredibly different, and it's challenging and it's difficult, but there's so much about it that comes back to those basic skills that you have when you're a communicator.
What about things like a budget and accounting? Were those areas that you felt you'd covered enough in the communications director oversight role?
Yeah. So when I was at CCSA, I think I was fortunate to have the opportunity to sit on the senior leadership team, and we set the priorities every year, and that included financial priorities, and then we were responsible for tracking our own budgets. I'm fortunate because I have a board that is very well-rounded in their skill set. And so, for instance, I have a treasurer who's a CPA, and she sat me down my first couple of weeks, walked me through everything, and she's also there whenever I need to ask her questions. And I think that's very important to have a board when you're an organization as small as Hopewell that can actually jump in and do things when required, because if all I had was a sort of policy governance oversight board, I would be floundering.
And now, I meant to say this earlier for the listeners, but I was curious about the difference between a CEO and an executive director. So I looked it up, and typically CEOs head a for-profit company, whereas an executive director runs a non-profit organization. So has sitting on the other side of the table made you consider communications, strategy, the function, or even the profession itself any differently now?
I think it has made me appreciate the ingrained skill set that I have in communications now. Once you're in the field and once you've practiced it for, I would say, between 5 to 7 years, it's like brushing your teeth. It's just something that you do. Mm-hmm. I consider communications to be one of the most useful professions and skills out there. I will always value the ability to convey a message and to write properly and to write well. It's as some of the things that I hold the most near and dear, not only just within myself, but with people that I hire. So now when I go to bring on a new employee, I put in place some tactics when I'm hiring that is going to judge their ability to think and reason and write. Mm-hmm. In terms of communications as a function and a strategy and a profession, I was fortunate when I was in government that I did some stints as a policy person and a program person. And even then, when I knew I was coming back to communications in the end, it always helped me to do the job I was doing. And I can say without reservation that some of the most talented people that I've worked with in government and outside are people who have either come from a communications background or who have done an assignment in a communications shop and really get to understand how things work.
Well, that's wonderful. I'm sure our listeners will like hearing that. Do you think more communications professionals should pursue executive director position or, you know, something outside of the communications realm?
I think that if they don't, they risk pigeonholing themselves into being a person that's only in communications. I know somebody actually right now who's very, very, very high up in the communications field in government, but never took the opportunity when they were younger to do assignments outside of communications. And so right now they find themselves in a position where they've really put themselves into a very narrow definition and box of who they are. I would say that for anybody, whether in government or a corporation or a nonprofit, take the opportunity to learn the other side of the fence. And that's not just because it pads your resume, but when I was in communications, I went into the policy function because I wanted to have a better understanding of what my clients did. I wanted to immerse myself and understand their reality. And I think that made me a better communicator. Now, the bonus, obviously, is that you end up padding your resume. And when you want to apply for a job in a different field, you can say you've done something besides comms. And I would counsel anybody out there to get that out of the way fairly early in their career so that they don't end up a senior executive that's only done one thing in their lives.
I think that's really valuable advice. Which brings me to actually any concluding thoughts or advice for others.
It's interesting to sit here considering that, you know, I always thought that I would be the vice president of communications in some large organization or the director general of communications in the government. I always thought that my career would take one straight line and that I would end up at this magical pot of gold at the end of the communications rainbow. And I'm not saying that's still not going to happen someday, but there has been a great deal of value in stepping back from the rat race that is communications. And I know that the listeners will appreciate that it is a very adrenaline fueled environment. It is a very now, it is, you have to get this done. The world is going to fall apart if this doesn't happen in the next 24 hours. I think that there's other ways that you can apply the very valuable communication skills without necessarily necessarily having to immerse yourself in that rat race for your entire career. That perspective, I think, is incredibly valuable. And I say this with complete honesty. I miss the adrenaline rush most days. But I think that at the end, it's important to present yourself and give yourself the opportunity to have a real breadth and depth of experience, not only in your profession, but also in your life. Round yourself out. Get out there and dip your toes in the water, and you just may end up a non-profit executive director making a tiny paycheck, but coming home at the end of the day and feeling like you've done some really good soul work.
Yeah, achieving immense returns in your community and beyond that.
Hopefully.
Well, hope is what you're all about, as I understand.
That's what we claim to be, and that's what I'm going to try and do every single day. And again, it comes back to knowing that your heart really wants you to do something that will help other people not feel that sense of incredible terror that you did. I think it's a really good idea at one point in everyone's life to do something that gives you that feeling of soul paycheck as opposed to the one that just goes in the bank.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And also everyone should put themselves in a role where they feel fear, because that means you're pushing yourself, and then that means you're not stagnating, you're continuing to grow.
Well, I hate to think what's going to terrify me next, because this one sure did.
Jody Bryan, thanks so much for joining us on The Voice today. Where can people go to learn more about Hopewell? And also please take this opportunity to tell us anything that's on the radar for Hopewell.
Yeah, so our website is hopewell.ca. There's a wealth of information there. And if anybody wants to pick up the phone and talk about any personal issues they or their friends or family members are facing, or if you even just want to talk to me more about what we've discussed here today on the podcast, don't hesitate to reach out. We are holding our annual fall fundraiser on Tuesday, September 19th. It's going to be really exciting. It's going to be high profile, and it's going to take some of the assumptions about eating disorders and turn them right on their heads. So stay tuned for more details. Catherine Dines from Magic 100 is going to be our master of ceremonies. She's a person with lived experience, and she's just starting to tell her story, and it's very moving.
Wonderful. And we didn't even mention this in the podcast, but you've got a very high profile supporter of Hopewell Eating Disorder Center, Sophie Gregoire Trudeau.
Yeah, so Madame was not able to attend our fundraiser last year, but she did record a video and it's up on our website. And we had the opportunity to meet on Parliament Hill on February 2nd. She came to an event that was being held for the express purpose of trying to move eating disorders onto the national agenda. She's a lovely individual. She has an incredible story herself. You know, I certainly hope that we can see her at our event in September, but if not, it's a great pleasure to see somebody who is so respected and admired, who has no fear about talking about her journey. And I can only hope that that will open the doors and break down the stigma so that others will feel more comfortable talking about the struggles they face.
Wonderful. Thanks again very much, Jody. It's been a real pleasure having you on the show, and really insightful beyond the straight up pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thanks to all the listeners for tuning in. The Voice is produced here in Ottawa, Canada. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. I'd like to thank Amanda Spironi of Thornley Fellas for mixing this episode. She's with Thornley Fellas, the Integrated Communications Agency. Make sure to visit ottawa.iabc.com for more about the show and related resources. IABC Ottawa is the voice of Ottawa's marketing and communications industry. And I'm your host, Tina Barton. Connect with me on LinkedIn and Twitter at Tina M. Barton. Thanks for listening, and join us again next time.